Well, it's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, Minnesota, my hometown. Out on the edge of the prairie. We're calling it spring there. It sort of seemed to be spring for a few hours here and a few hours there. So that's what people are saying when they run into each other on Main Street. They say, it sure looks like spring. So we've sort of taken a vote on it, and we've accepted it as spring, even though we know perfectly well that it's going to snow again. The furnaces are still on. But nonetheless, it's spring because spring has to come sometime, and it may as well be now. And the crocuses are sort of in bloom. They're poking up a little bit. And the first moths have been seen in town. And the street sweeper has come through. Bud, the maintenance man, has taken the sweeper through. And animals are behaving in a weird way, which you do when you are courting and mating. And young people are walking around without jackets. And that's the sign of spring. They leave the house with them in the morning and they stuff them into their backpacks, and then they run around with their shirts half buttoned as if they were living in California and not where they are. Children thrive on denial. They thrive on unreality. They live on hope. They breathe it. They exhale it. The rest of us inhale what's left. Lyle Jansky had a boy who went around without a scarf and without gloves, and he came down with what they thought was a cold, and then it turned into some strange bacterial infection, and he lay in bed. This was years ago, and he lay there ashen and pale and wheezing in bed, and his mother and father both were convinced that the boy was going to die. He was 14 years old, and he was not himself. He lay there pale and sweating between the sheets. They were sure he was going to die, but didn't dare mention this for fear it might make it come true. And this is the magic of Lake Wobegon. They never spoke to each other about him. The mother went off and she drank a lot of Brandy Alexander's, and Lyle volunteered for everything to take his mind off it, everything at church and at school. And he was in charge of concessions at the basketball games, selling hot dogs and Coke and coffee and popcorn as well. And it was there that he started to steal money out of the cash drawer, amazed at how easy it was to filch $100 a game, pick out 5 20s out of the cash drawer and just walk away with it. He was surprised that more people hadn't done this, but maybe they had. Who could say? He wanted the money so that he could take his boy to a specialist in the cities and find out what was wrong with him, but he lived in terror that he would be discovered. He was amazed that the Jacobson girl who worked in the concession with him didn't notice him stealing money, and he wondered. She always wanted to talk about religious faith, and he thought maybe she knew something, but no, she was just reading Kierkegaard for a philosophy course, and so she was all thinking about that. She didn't notice him pulling 5 20s, 6 7 20s out of the cash drawer every Tuesday night, every Friday night. He went on, and he saved up, and he got a couple thousand, $2,400 he got all pieced together and put it in a safe place at home. He was terrified, of course, that he'd be caught and humiliated in front of everybody. But he took his boy down to the cities to a specialist, and the specialist gave him all sorts of expensive blood tests. And the specialist said, well, it could be something serious or might not be. So why don't we just wait and see what develops? And that's all he got for his money. And then one day he was called into Mr. Halverson's office and had to sit there in the anteroom because the superintendent was on the phone. He sat there next to a senior named Arnold who was sobbing to himself. He'd been caught stealing a book called Human Anatomy. with pictures of naked people and their parts labeled. He sat there sobbing. His face was all contorted, and Lyle was worried about this boy. Lyle, who teaches biology, was worried that this boy was so wrought up with shame he might go home and take a belt and put it around his own neck and hang himself from a pipe in the basement. Teenage boys do this in small towns. They're held to such exact standards and the so little slack that when you fall short and you do something horrible, like look at naked pictures, you feel as if you're falling off the edge of the known world. This kid didn't know that Seattle is just out that way. You can get there. You can get there by bus or by car, and in Seattle, you will find not only pictures of naked people, you will find naked people themselves. And nobody will think twice about it if you should be curious about these things. Well, finally, Mr. Halverson called Lyle in, and he said, "Lyle, there seems to be some discrepancy in the cash drawer situation at the basketball games. Could you look into this?" Lyle's heart was pounding so hard he could see his chest rise and fall. He took what money he had. He only had $500 left, and he took it to an Indian casino. And he sat down at the blackjack table. And after he'd lost $200 of the five, he lost his nerve and he walked away. And now he had one place to go. He had to go talk to his father, who lived in Millet and who was 92 and had his good days and his bad days. But on his bad days, he confused Lyle with Lyle's Uncle Fred, who had died in 1934. Of a boil that he had squeezed back before there was penicillin, and Uncle Fred died. Lyle had never, ever met him. And this was one of his father's bad days. Lyle was going to ask to borrow money, and his father looked at him, and he said, "Fred, how have you been? Haven't seen you for a while." Lyle said, "I've been fine, Johnny, but I need to borrow some money from you." "Oh, what's that for, friend?" "Well," Lyle said, I fell in love. I met a woman out in the woods. She was camping out in the woods. It was March, and it was cold out there, and she didn't know how to light a fire. She was a beautiful, pale, shining woman with red hair. I could see her through the trees, even though the sun had gone down and it was twilight. She was there on a spiritual retreat, and she was freezing to death out there, which would be a retreat and a spiritual one, but maybe the sort you weren't counting on. So I managed to kindle her fire, and I put my arms around her, and we sat there looking at the fire, and I fell in love with her, Johnny, and I need to go out to Seattle. That's where she's from. Her father runs a fishing boat there off the coast, and I'm going to be his first mate, but I have to buy a partnership in the boat, and I need $3,000. "Well," Lyle's dad said, of course, Fred, I can do that for you. I'll never forget how you saved my life that time when we went canoeing up on Lake Superior, and I wanted to go canoe into that deep cavern in that rocky island, these limestone caves that went way back in, and the water was in the bottom of the canoe. We canoed in. We were in the same canoe. You remember this, Fred, don't you?" Lyle had never heard this story. We went in, and it was so beautiful, and the lights were reflecting off the water and dancing. It was magical, quartz and crystal on the walls, and it was all shining, and places it was blue, and other places it was green. It was a magical cave. But you said, we've got to get out of here. And I said, no, no, no. But you were in the stern, and you turned that canoe around, and you headed for the entrance, and we'd cleared the entrance by 50 feet, and those big waves came rolling in from the wake of that oar boat half a mile away. And we sat there in the canoe, and we watched them crash, tons of water explode in those caves where we would have been ground into hamburger. You saved my life, Fred. I've never forgotten that. And he went under his bed, and he got out a shoebox, and he counted out $3,000 and gave it to Lyle, and Lyle went to school. Now he had to find a way to slip it into Mr. Halverson's desk, into the cash box in the top drawer of his desk. He knew where it was, but he didn't have a key. The principal had the key. It was on a big ring of keys hanging from his belt. Lyle had to watch him for a couple of days. And meanwhile, Halverson was asking him if he'd figured out the cash discrepancy. No, he said, I'm working on it. I'm getting closer to it. And one day after school, the principal came down to the men's locker room. Lyle followed him down, and he undressed, and he left his clothes in the locker, and he put on his shorts and T-shirt, and he went out to play basketball with some faculty members. Lyle snatched the keys off the ring, and he dashed up to his office, and he tried out 16 keys before he found the key to the office, and then another 10 before he found the one to the drawer, and then had to find the one to the cash box. He put the $1,400 into a bank deposit envelope, and he slipped it alongside the cash box, and then the bells went off, and he almost jumped into the air. He dashed out, and he ran down to the locker room, but it was too late. The principal had taken a shower already, and he was standing by his locker door, about to reach in and pull out his pants and see the keys were not on them. Lyle had an inspiration. He walked over to the janitor's sink, and he turned the water on full blast, and the sound of water flowing. The principal walked naked into the men's room to the urinal, and Lyle managed to get the keys on his pants and closed the door as the principal came out, and he was safe. The principal looked at him, and he said, "You spilled something on yourself." Lyle looked down. He'd wet his pants, probably when the bells went off. He worried about this for a long time, worried that he'd be caught, worried that he'd be taken off by the police, he'd be sent off to prison, veteran school teacher arrested for embezzling, friends, family, shocked, least likely person you'd ever expect, volunteered in the church, the community. He was such a good person, so trustworthy. We never thought he would ever do a thing like this. The money was for the scholarship fund so the kids with no means could go off to good colleges, and now they wouldn't. Because of him, a whole generation of them had not been able to go. They had to work as parking attendants and dishwashers, probably fell among bad companions, took up smoking, drinking, maybe became dead-enders, their futures lost, all because of him. So they'd argue for a prison sentence for him. He'd have to go off to prison, which is like high school, but with a vengeance and with no women present. He's worried about this year after year. His boy got better. His boy, the infection went away. Lyle will be at church Holy Week every day. He'll be sitting there in the second pew. The sermon on Sunday will be, "Forgive them, for they know not what they do." Well, neither does anybody else. But he sits there with a cloud of guilt over his head. He never dared tell his wife in that continuing skirmish, which is marriage. Two people trying to become one, two people who are one trying to become two again. In this skirmish, you don't want to give any advantage to the other side. So his confession will be very, very quiet. This is why you children should wear scarves. This is why you should wear your gloves. Even when it comes into late March, even into April, you put your poor parents to so, so much trouble. That's the news from Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong, all the men are good-looking, and all the children are above average.